my name is Ian McMillan.
And I'm Joel Thiel.
And welcome back to episode 3 of Exploring the Arts. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. David Erb. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so, I mean, without further ado, let's just kick it off. So first order of business, who are you?
Who am I? David Erb. I am a fellow of music at New St. Andrews College and the director of the Conservatory of Music. Hail from Wisconsin, the great Badger State. Been here at NSA for, this is my 15th school year.
Awesome. Awesome. And what do you do as the director of the conservatory? What does that involve?
Well, lots of stuff. There's administrative things and organizational things, of course. Kind of overseeing everything that happens. I don't do everything that happens, but oversee it. So there is the Certificate of Music program, which is kind of an addendum on top of the NSA degree. There are the community lessons that we offer to students, adults, whatnot, the Schola Cantorum classes, music camp in the summer, the Chenaniah Summer Music Institute, the Honor Choir. That's, I guess, the majority of it.
Yeah. Has that been a thing since ever since you came to NSA, or was that something you helped head up to start?
The conservatory's been around 5-6 years. Some of the things, music camp started pretty early with my coming here. Schola Cantorum, the Kodai classes we offer to children in the community, those started early. Those began under the church. I was working at Christ Church at the time. They moved under the umbrella of the conservatory a number of years ago. And then the other things have happened more recently. CSMI has been around about 5-6 years as well. And the Honor Choir, this will be our third summer doing our Honor Choir. We started it pre-COVID, did 2 years, and then COVID's kind of put it on hold for actually 3 years. So we're eager to get back at that this summer.
Yeah. And what is that with the Honor Choir?
Yeah, it's for high school students that are in ACCS schools or affiliated with ACCS, online ACCS, or sometimes there's homeschoolers that are affiliated with it as well. So students in high school can audition. There's music they have to prepare, and then we choose some and not others. And then we meet for about 5 days, 4 or 5 days during the ACCS conference, which is at different cities each year. And then we put on a concert for the attendees of the conference.
Awesome. That's awesome. Cool. So now going more broad, I guess just initial question, why are you so into music? Why do you do what you do?
I often say life began when I was 8. Okay. my mother asked me if I wanted to join a community boy choir. Mm-hmm. So I said, sure. And I think I started the youth church choir at that age mm-hmm. also. And I started soccer, which is kind of a important theme in my life too. Okay. So I started all those things when I was 8. And then I just kind of stayed with music all through schooling age, did different things, took piano lessons, voice lessons, trombone. And by the time I was thinking about college, I just knew I wanted to direct choirs. There was no uncertainty for me at all. Mm-hmm. And then I just stuck with it my entire life.
Was there a specific boy choir, or the choir, or a person growing up that was a really big influence in that pursuit of choir directing?
Yeah, I mean, I think all those things fed into it in different ways, but I would probably point to my boy choir experience. Mrs. Prayer, the director, was very good at what she did and very enthusiastic and very formative. And I think, well, taught me a lot as a kid growing up, and was my first and strongest choral conductor. So I really would put that as kind of a foundation block. And then many others along the way, but I would start there.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so kind of building off of that, you said soccer is also an important theme kind of in that. So let's get into, I guess, your childhood and, you know, everything kind of after that. So you grew up in Wisconsin, right? So, I mean, tell us about that. You know, how did you get involved with soccer? And then I think part of that question, too, is also, you know, how you came to know the Lord or what, you know, significant events there were in that regard.
Yeah. Well, I started playing soccer on a neighborhood team that was newly started.
Yeah.
So joined it, was with that until I got to high school and played high school soccer. Mm-hmm. Broke my arm playing soccer when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, we played soccer against Iron Maiden.
Okay.
One of my teammates was a metalhead, and there was an ad in one of the metal magazines that said, if they're touring in your area, you can write them. They like to play soccer when they tour, so okay. We did.
Were they any good?
Yeah, and we got free tickets and backstage passes, and
nice.
Quite
awesome.
The experience.
Yeah.
And then I guess kind of tying it off, I ended up meeting my wife on a trip to the Czech Republic, Athletes in Action, women's soccer tour. Mm-hmm. Long story there, too long for this, but okay. So soccer kind of was a thread through much of my life. Growing up, my mom took my brother and I to church fairly regularly. She sang in the church choir. Mm. And then through... It wasn't a real strong part of our home mm-hmm. life. And then during college, off and on, I would have church choir jobs, which was one of the ways for me to learn mm-hmm. my craft. So a variety of different church denominations while I was doing that.
Yeah.
And then when I was during my undergraduate time, I had there's some Christian friends and then some of their music teachers who were kind of young, up-and-coming music teachers in the state, and they mm-hmm. were faithful evangelical Christians. And so being around them and seeing how they did what they did and just who they were, mm-hmm. I started asking a lot more questions at that point about matters of faith and grew a lot at that point.
Yeah.
And then lots of things kind of along the way. Didn't really become reformed until I was in the courtship process. My wife was reformed at the time, and mm-hmm. so reading lots of things and considering things, and voila, said, I guess I'm reformed.
Nice.
Awesome.
And so, I don't know, anybody who's been in one of your classes or in one of your choirs knows the passion that you have for music, and I think particularly when it comes to, you know, worshiping God. For you, like, what significance would you kind of associate with singing and music generally for the Christian and the Christian life?
Yeah.
It's a big question, but...
It is a pretty big question. I'll try not to go too long on it.
Yeah.
It's real clear when you read the Bible that... everyone is called to sing. It says it over and over again in the Psalms, of course. God gives us 150 songs, but he says it elsewhere too. He Zephaniah says that he rejoices over us with singing. Mm-hmm. We're created in his image, and he calls all people to sing unto him. In the epistles, we read that the word of Christ is supposed to dwell in us richly, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Mm-hmm. The parallel passage being, be filled with the Spirit in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. It's one of the very few things we know for certain that we'll be doing in heaven all our days is singing. We'll surely be doing lots of other things, but it doesn't give us glimpses into that in Revelation or other passages. It's one of those things, I didn't think about those things when I was younger. I had training in good, solid, classical choral music, and was passionate about it. And then as I started to grow, in my understanding of God's word and reading these things that gave foundation to the strength of that music, those things wed, as I kind of came into the Reformed world, the ACCS, CREC, mm-hmm. And kind of the music training and the theological training kind of wed together. It's been a joy to get to do that the last 20 years, really.
Yeah, that's amazing. And coming to NSA, like there's such an emphasis on music. Like it's a required class right. for all of the freshmen. And I think principally just to be able to worship God rightly, right? Me coming from kind of like a mega church background where there really wasn't a big emphasis on music. I know I've been blessed by that. And so what do you think, what would you like to see kind of in the church culture at large? What has the modern church kind of lost when it's come to music? What do we need to recover?
Yeah, I would put it under the auspices of being musically literate. It's not that the church was completely musically literate ever. There have been pockets of it at different times in history or different places. And literacy is not just the ability to read music, to analyze it or to write it, though certainly that's part of it, but also to know core repertoire in literature. So if someone's literate in a language, in English, of course, yes, reading and writing, but then literature goes with that. Have you read Shakespeare? Have you read other great works? That's part of being literate in something. Yeah. And there's throughout much of Western civilization, the greatest music written was in the church. And the church, the modern church, broad brushstroke, is unfamiliar with it completely. That's something that needs to be recovered. And then just the ability to sing well, and to be able to sing that kind of music. It can be difficult if one hasn't been trained to sing much at all, or to understand that kind of music. It all seems foreign. It seems like a foreign language. Yeah. And so the unfamiliarity with it makes people not want to do it because they've never done it. And they've had other experiences which they've done. And I do think there's a recovery that needs to take place. To, like everything we do, we're supposed to grow into maturity. And that doesn't mean everything has to be the most difficult, but there is a growth and maturity that happens as a Christian, whether that's the way we interact with one another as husbands and wives, parents and children, just throughout the community in general. From the way we build houses, that's a blessing that it's no longer straw on the above our heads and dirt floors, and no different with music.
And with your own experiences coming into a more reformed view of faith, and your musical your view of music kind of maturing a bit, do you see with your experiences doing different denominations of choirs, do you see a certain maturity in music when they're a little bit closer, like more gospel centered? Is there do they go hand in hand a little bit?
Sometimes, not always. You'll see there are a lot of denominations where musically they do have a remnant of a more mature music and worship liturgy. And that generally was tied to a much more biblically centered theology as well. And then sometimes you'll see the theology start to slip, to go off the mark a bit. And sometimes there's a remnant where that music still is established. And then often it will follow and fade as well. And there's a lot of different streams, I would say, in the Reformed world. One of the things in the Calvinistic Reformed world historically was there was no use of instruments in many places. Certainly, you didn't sing hymns. You only sang words out of Scripture or some kind of translation, paraphrase out of Scripture. The stronger musical heritage would have been out of the Lutheran side of things, just theological views of music in worship. A lot of musicians will, Reformed musicians might say something like, "Well, theologically I'm Calvinistic Reformed, but musically I'm a Lutheran." Just all the glory that's grown out of that. So I think it depends on the place. I think as things have grown in the CREC world, for most people, the music is a new thing, the more difficult music that's done in a lot of places, doing Gudamel and Schutz, and it's a recovery, and it's often very difficult, at least for the first year, as you get used to it. And then usually there's a tipping point where people start to, okay, I get it. I start to get it at any rate, and I think this is better, I want to do it, but it still can be difficult because we get back to the literacy thing, maybe an inability to sing it as easily or readily. So it's a long work in progress to recover it, but certainly worth, the endeavor is worth it.
And would you say that's one of kind of the main goals of what NSA is trying to do with the whole music colloquium?
Yeah, I think absolutely that trying to have a foundation of music for all the students. Obviously, there's extra study for the students that are in the certificate program, but but foundationally, the goal is that every student, regardless of their musical ability, will have a foundation that when as they go through life, they'll be better equipped just to sing and worship on Sundays, and then hopefully to lead in their homes. And I often kind of tease my students, but it's because I know it's true. The majority of my students won't be music teachers. They have no thought of doing that. They're not, they won't reach that level. But what happens often is there'll be an NSA grad who ends up at some school or a church community, and they don't have anybody to lead their music. And they, oh, you went to NSA. So you studied music, right? Yeah. and they're the best option. And I'll get calls or emails from former students who they weren't thinking they were going to be teaching music. Dr. Erb, it happened. They want me to teach elementary music or do a children's choir at church. What do I do? Help. And I give them, I said, you should have listened more and worked harder during school. No, I try to help them as able. But so yeah, it's, you know, if they're better equipped, the hope being that there'll be seeds in their church and school communities, and then hopefully also desire to have more training for their children, because unfortunately, despite what Scripture says or despite the place that music has even in a pagan classical world, music isn't a central subject for most children growing up. It might be a little bit of an elective or an appreciation, but not something that there's an expectation that the students actually really learn music so that they could read and write it just like they do their primary language or a secondary language, whether that's Latin or Spanish, whatever it might happen to be. It's not that kind of a serious subject. And so, you know, I'm always talking to my students, regularly talking to them about, you know, if that's the case, when you get to the point of having kids and that's not an option, then try to be a catalyst for it to become an option, even if you're not the one that's going to teach it.
Yeah. And then going back to your, we're talking about your experiences with different different choirs in college. Where did you go to college and like your experiences there?
Yeah, my undergraduate was at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And then I taught public school for a little while. Then I did a master's at Westminster Choir College, which at that time was in Princeton, New Jersey. And then I taught a year at Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. Then I went back and did my doctorate, well, started it back at Madison. Then I taught at a university, Lawrence University, for a couple years. And then I kind of left that whole part, that side of the world musically, and moved into the ACCS, CREC world, and was working with school-age kids again and a church music program that there really hadn't been much at either of those places. So it was building it up, and that preceded me coming here. So that was kind of a quick little journey through life from college to here.
Yeah. And so like at Lawrence University where you were teaching, were those Christ-centered choirs that you were directing, or were they other
None of my, other than doing some church choirs along the way, none of my vocational jobs were in a Christian setting, a public school or private universities along the way. So, you know, you certainly did lots of Christian music, but you couldn't talk about it in the way that I do here at NSA, where we talk about what it means. Not, well, at some point in history, somebody believed this might be the case, where you're kind of talking around it or trying to make it, you know, a lot of times in those settings, people will talk about it transcends all faiths. It transcends religion. Well, maybe I mean, it's true whether you believe it or not. So it does transcend whatever you believe. Right. But,
nice.
So, you know, there are some wonderful. I'm thankful for all the teaching opportunities I had and fond memories of the places and the people that I worked with, and certainly Christians in all of those places, in choirs or faculty, and then but plenty not, and it certainly wasn't at the center of what was happening in any of them. So I'm thankful for it. And there are things I miss about all of those places, the people and the places, but I don't miss having to, for that not to be at the center of what I do. I'm thankful that it's at the very center of everything I'm doing here.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And kind of during that time, what would you say, because as you were growing as a choir director, what influenced your style and kind of philosophy of choir directing the most, would you say?
Yeah, it's the different, mainly the different conductors. I mean, I read lots of books and things like that, but from my boy choir director to my, all of my college directors, my 3 degrees, and then teachers that I did student teaching with and was mentored by, particularly during my undergraduate years. And you know, there are conductors that influence you that are from afar, professional conductors that you learn from and take things from, or, you know, went to lots of conferences, choral conferences and conventions when I was growing up and learning the craft. And you learn a lot by hearing choirs and developing an ear for different things. And then some become, you gravitate towards certain things and they start to form you by listening. But really, I would say it's the conductors I was able to sing under. So many of them, and they were just excellent at what they did. And, you know, there's certainly things that, you know, I can think on and say, oh, that's a definite connection to such and such a conductor. But I think at the end of the day, it all, you know, you sang under them, you learned under them, and it forms you, and then it comes out differently. It comes out you, and you're not really even aware of the specifics. But that's, I would point to the people.
In that, in your path to NSA, was there anything in your style of teaching or how you interacted with choirs that you can specifically point to? I know you just said not necessarily specifics, but was there anything that broadly really changed or changed while you were getting to NSA?
I don't know. I think it's gradual. It's conducting choirs is the only job I've ever done. My wife sees that as a character fault, or something like that. But it's really all I've ever done is direct choirs. And so I was either directing choirs or studying how to direct choirs. And so it was just this constant learning process. And then I was blessed to have opportunities all along the way, which is hard as a conductor. You know, if you study piano or violin or flute or some other instrument, you have your instrument, you can go into a practice room and you can practice as long as you want all day long. If you're learning to be a conductor, you don't have at your disposal a group of people to sing for you whenever you want to figure out how that works.
Right.
So it's really kind of a difficult learning curve. And I was blessed to have opportunities to do it while I was learning. But I do remember one thing in particular. A lot of my mentor teachers when I was growing up were very high energy, really good teachers. And so I was very high energy when I first started teaching. And a lot of times you're working with a choir that they don't have a lot of skill. They don't read music often. They haven't had voice lessons. I mean, if you direct an orchestra or a band, generally the students have some sort of lessons on their instrument, but not so in choir. And so that creates issues as far as what they can do. And so I would provide a lot of energy. Basically, I would provide the energy for the entire choir. Mm-hmm. And very early on, I thought, this is going to kill me. and I'm still, I mean, you both had classes with me and mm-hmm. sung under me. I'm still very high energy in what I do. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I learned is I need to teach them how to do what they need to do as best you can in that kind of a setting, short of voice lessons and all the other music reading classes, you know, what's possible in the choral setting. But I also need to teach them and expect from them to do something. So conducting is a lot like coaching. At least that's how I think about it. You know, if you're coaching kids, whether it's basketball, soccer, football, and they're not putting forth any energy, you're going to find ways to make them give energy. And at some point they don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be very enjoyable. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like that with my choirs. I don't let them just not work very hard, not try. Now I can't expect them to do what they're not able to do, mm-hmm. but I can push them beyond what they think they can do. Mm-hmm. And so the energy's high, but demanding the best that they can give. Mm-hmm. So that they have an experience that they love. Mm-hmm. You're only going to love it if you work hard at something. And whatever level you get to, if you work hard at it, you'll be thankful for it. You'll have enjoyed it. If it was just kind of an easy coast, feel good. Oh, that was nice. You don't have that kind of connection. You don't have that the energy and the glory that comes from it, really.
Yeah. I remember like one of the most glorious moments from your oral skills class freshman year was kind of at the end of the year when you just handed out sheet music for like the final class and we all just sang it. And then at the end, when we finished, you were like, none of you could do that at the beginning of the year. And that was just really, really wonderful. And so would you say there's anything in particular that, in terms of the energy thing that you were talking about, is there anything in particular that really gets your choirs going, if that makes sense?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of things one could say. yeah. You know, generally speaking, I would say it's all born out of the music. So it's mm-hmm. you know, I'm not the way I am in choir. I'm not like that when I'm just sitting around hanging out.
So have you been in?
I have. Okay.
Yeah.
but it is born out of the music and what's necessary. I mean, so you're doing music that, you know, might be full of energy, lots mm-hmm. of rhythm. It might be more subtle, very poignant. Mm-hmm. With a great depth of beauty to it. Mm. It may be thick and broad and very majestic. There's all sorts of different styles of music trying to communicate something. And and it's tied to a text always in choir. Yeah. So there's you know, if it's done well, and there's a lot we could go into historically, but music's trying to rhetorically convey something mm-hmm. in a particular way. It may be just trying to communicate it in beauty, but not picturing the music so much. And then there's other music that really tries to picture more of the emotion behind a text. And whatever the music's demanding, that's what I'm doing because that music's in my head, it's in my heart, my soul, yeah. it's pouring through me. And then as the choir does it, they start to get that. And then I need to mm-hmm. help them to kind of get in the wave of that so that they can understand it and yeah. then do it. And then, and conversely, when they're not, I'm on them because they're quenching the spirit, if you will. I don't mean theologically speaking, but there's this energy that's in this music and they're a wet blanket on it if they're not they don't understand it or they're not trying or it's too difficult. And so I've got to work to get them there because if you don't, it's just failure really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, you know, if one's trying and you don't get there, I don't mean that kind of failure. I mean, what a composer writes something to be beautiful, to be poignant, to be powerful, to be majestic. Nobody writes it to be blah. But there are so many choirs when they sing, it's just blah. Mm-hmm. And then people think that music is blah. Now, it could be bad music or blah music, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of choirs who sing incredible music and they sing it poorly on all sorts of levels. They don't like it and the audience don't like it. Mm-hmm. And they think the music is blah, but it's not the music is blah. It was the performance of the music that was blah. It was the whole rhetorical event that took place. Mm-hmm. And I can't stand that. I mean, it's just abysmal and it's sad. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's where the energy comes from in choir, because I want the students, well, I want to experience the glory. I want to experience the majesty. It energizes me. It's wonderful. It's like being within the glory cloud or something like that. Yeah. And I want the students to experience that. And then I want them to be able to communicate that to the audience so that they can experience that. And when that happens, it is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what I'm always struck by in choir is how much you're wanting us to get it, how you want it to go, and then also how well you're able to communicate that to us. You have a lot of analogies. I don't know if you just have them in your back pocket or you can make, or if you're good at overtime, you're just good at making them up. But usually they're very entertaining, but at the same time, they're really good at helping us internalize how it is that you want us to be, as you said, like the rhetorical use of the music and how you want us to convey that to the audience. Is that something that you picked up over the years, like these funny analogies?
Yeah, I'd have to think back.
Are there any ones that you remember, Joel?
I'm sure. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
So much of what one does, you know, if you could go back and watch the tape, oh, I learned that from that conductor or in this rehearsal or. And then they become a part of you and you don't even remember where you learned it. This is what I do. Yeah, but it probably came from somebody else. So I don't take too much credit. I think that way. I think most good teachers, it may come out differently, but good teachers do that. I mean, Jesus did that all the time, speaking in parables, and poetic descriptions of things as well, but tying things to real things in life. So, you know, parables flow out of my life, and I will try to make things that will connect to students. But I'll have to confess, I'm kind of an old school guy. So if I make pop music references, they're about 30, 40 years old at this point, or movie references or things. But
we also get a lot of sports references, which a lot some of sports, people may not understand.
NSA sports references sometimes go over the head, but I love sports a lot. So, trying to tie them to things. And even if the references don't land perfectly, usually there's some sense of, I get what it's like, even if I, you know, haven't played that sport. Right. And it makes it more vivid. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly plenty of them that become things that you've used over the years. And then a lot of times, I never plan them in a rehearsal. They just... Here's what's happening in the rehearsal, and that's like this. And sometimes I'm as surprised as anybody is what comes out of my mouth.
That's awesome. Great. Well, this has been wonderful. And I guess in closing, one thing we do with all of our the people we interview is we ask them some fun facts. And what you gave us for this one was that you love the smell of skunks.
I do.
Can you defend that or elaborate?
My wife never likes it when I share that. You shouldn't tell people that. You have it. I don't know. I've always liked the smell of skunk, and I've met plenty of people over the years that actually do as well. There are things it reminds me of that I choose not to share with people. I certainly wouldn't want to be sprayed by one or have my dog sprayed by a skunk, but when I smell a skunk off in the distance or you're out driving, I take a deep breath and
You also said some of your hobbies are ping pong. Like ping, one of your hobbies is
thank
ping
you for
pong.
The skunk. Moving along.
But ping pong.
Ping pong.
Yeah, ping pong, bowling would be two of my big hobbies. I haven't bowled for a while now, but was did a lot of that in Wisconsin and still play a lot of ping pong. There's not yet been an NSA student who's beat me in 15 years.
Wow.
and I've been, it's been fun. I've been starting to ramp that up recently with one of our new faculty, Mr. Foster. We've been playing quite a bit and having a great time with that.
Awesome. That's awesome. And one more thing I'm seeing on here. You said you've directed a couple community theater musicals. What's the experience like compared to like a big choir?
Yeah. It's very different. I mean, obviously musicals have singing in it, solo singing, a lot of solo singing, and then some choral singing depends on the musical.
Right.
But that's really where I cut my teeth. The summer before I went to college, I was hired to direct the music for Fiddler on the Roof, small little community choir in Wisconsin, community theater rather. And I did that for 5 summers, three at that theater and then two at 2 other places, and then did some in public schools, musical theater. So I cut my teeth a lot on musical theater. And while it's not directing a choir in the same way where you're standing up and conducting them with more classical stuff, still learn how to teach and get the best out of the group in front of you. That's the similarity. Obviously, it's a very different style of music. It's one of those things you'll do for a couple of months in the summer versus kind of all year long kind of thing. A group that comes together in a short time, but a lot of fun. I enjoy doing that a lot. Not sure I've got that kind of energy in me to want to do it again, but enjoyed it a lot.
Awesome. Well, this has been really great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.